This is Civic Media, bringing you news, talk, and community-minded conversations all across Wisconsin. You can find us at civicmedia.us and download the app for free today. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco, sports director for Civic Media. Right now, we're airing a Packers, Badgers, Brewers, or Bucks game over the air, but due to our rights agreements, we're not able to stream those games here. Civic Media might be a newer company, but we are dedicated to providing the best in sports coverage. Our team has decades of experience covering sports right here in Wisconsin. We've got Mike Clemens, who covers our state's biggest teams on location and does daily updates on all of our Civic Media stations statewide. Many of our stations have local reporters dedicated to teams in their area, covering their community dozens or even hundreds of times each year. No matter where you're at in Wisconsin, we are committed to covering sports, especially in the communities that our stations serve. And we put all of our local coverage right here on our stream, so you can go ahead and grab the free Civic Media app so you never miss a game at civicmedia.us/app. You can find the game you're looking for over the air, or you can stay tuned right here on the stream for more news, talk, and conversation. Thank you for listening to Civic Media from all of us here on the sports team.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Wisconsin has one of the higher closure rates in the U.S. for charter schools. A new report lays out the challenges. Here's Mike Moen.
Charter schools, which receive public funding but are often run by private entities, are billed as alternative learning environments for families who feel they need more options. But the new findings show nationally, more than a quarter of them close by year five, with rates worsening over time. Wisconsin is among the states with a closure rate of at least 45%. Jenny Hofschulte of the Wisconsin Public Education Network says families enrolled are less scrambling when a charter school abruptly closes.
That's 45% of those families put into a lurch and having to make pivots and new choices for their children.
The report from the National Center for Charter School Accountability cites low enrollment, along with fraud and mismanagement, as the top factors behind the closures. Backers of charters say despite these issues, these schools are sometimes still the best options in underserved areas. Hofschulte acknowledges some families might be happy with their charter school, but as the push to authorize these sites over time ignores the root issues that hinder educational outcomes.
When you look at student outcomes, like, poverty plays the biggest role in it, but we're not talking about how to address poverty in communities. We're saying, like, well, it must be the public school system, so we'll do this other thing. You know, a charter will be better.
The Milwaukee public school system recently dealt with a financial scandal. Hofschulte says that shouldn't be taken lightly, but she suggests those examples are scrutinized more than the shortcomings of charter schools. According to state data, Wisconsin currently has 226 charter schools in operation. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Lots to get to, lots to talk about, lots of responses to the Trump Bible. A lot of people not believing that the Donald would thus print the Bible in China. A lot of people complaining that I'm wrong, that if that were the case, it would be all over the place. It would be headline news everywhere. Now, the Trump Bible with the Constitution and the founding documents were printed in China. It's been reported widely. I don't argue. I don't think enough. I think this should be frontline every day. But enough that a lot of people missed it. And understand, you know, Trump has been printing off and getting things made in China for years. Not new. It's just that nobody seemed to really care anymore. Yeah, he got caught again and not being held accountable again. And am I surprised? No, because we've got a corporate-controlled, for-profit media that loves this guy because it means clicks. It means money. I think it was Les Moonves who said, he may be bad for the country, but he's good for our bottom line. And that's true. But at this point, we got to start talking about what's good for the country. In fact, this week, the New York Times did a bit, an interview with Trump's former chief of staff, John Kelly, you know, where he, you know, yeah, said some interesting things. Said that Trump would met the definition of a fascist, and would govern like a dictator if allowed, and had no understanding of the Constitution or the concept of the rule of law. Now, remember, Kelly's the guy who confirmed reports previous that Trump called injured soldiers suckers and losers. So, not surprised. But here's the thing. The New York Times did this bit. The Washington Post didn't have anything on the front page. Los Angeles Times didn't have anything on the front page. USA Today, nothing. Wall Street Journal, nothing. Major newspapers across the country, nothing. Nothing on the front page. But what I did see, and you got to love how our mainstream media works. What I did see is I saw Newsweek. And you got to love Newsweek for coming out with the, you know, did Donald Trump really fire John Kelly? And you go, this is the problem here. Now, understand, Trump doesn't get held to the same standards as literally everybody else. He can say the craziest stuff. He can get away with just the most insane stunts possible. The French fry gate. And nobody in our media is going to hold him accountable. And look, the fact that the majority of his cabinet, you know, the very best people. And this is what I threw out. Explain to me how it is the very best people, hand chosen by Trump himself, aren't supporting him. John Kelly called him a fascist. Mark Milley served as chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Said Trump is a wannabe dictator. He said, we don't take an oath to a country. We don't take an oath to a tribe. We don't take an oath to a religion. We don't take an oath to a king or queen or a tyrant or a dictator. And we don't take an oath to a wannabe dictator. Milley called Trump fascist to the core. And well, that's not really front and center. Jim Mattis, former Secretary of Defense, said, I will not be lectured on what our country should be by a man who spent his entire adult life avoiding responsibility. Now, remember, the very best people Trump hand chose, military people. You remember how the Republicans used to be the party of the military and that? Well, now you've got Trump running around going, well, you got all these woke generals. I like half the military. What? And the thing is you go down the list, and it's an extensive list of former Trumpites, people hand-chosen, the very best people. John Bolton, the guy I'm not a huge fan of, but was Trump's national security advisor, said the president's behavior is erratic and is not fit for office. This is a guy who wanted to bomb everything, saying Trump's not the guy. Rex Tillerson, my favorite of the Trump folk, just said, he was a moron, and I would have to study to be a moron. And does that get any, did that get on any front pages? The fact that the very best people, and I keep coming back to this, hand chosen by Trump himself, calls him a moron. Anthony Scaramucci, who now Time is named after because of how fast he got shown the door as former White House communications director. He said, I'm not going to be a sycophant for the president because that's what he wants. He wants people who are only going to follow the leader and never ask questions, never, never disagree. And I agree with what Michael Cohen said. He's a con man and he's a cheat. Kellyanne Conway. you know, back then said, you know, when he was in office, you know, maybe he should be careful what he tweets. It can be damaging. Did he listen to her? No. And you could go down the list of, you know, of the people who have said just, you know, the mouse, his own vice president isn't going to endorse him. Didn't endorse him. Richard Spencer, former Secretary of the Navy under Trump, said the president has very little understanding of what it means to be in the military, to fight ethically, or to be governed by a uniform set of rules and practices. But not anything. H.R. McMaster, a career Army officer, White House National Security Advisor, said that Trump and other officials have repeatedly compromised the principles of the country in pursuit of partisan advantage and personal gain. Back to John Bolton, said if Trump wins in November, the Kremlin will be celebrating. Putin thinks he's an easy mark. In fact, Bolton on Twitter wrote, Trump Donald Trump wants America to treat him like North Koreans treat Kim Jong-un. Get ready. And look, we can continue to go down this list of all of these very best people and all of the things that they've said. And it's all going to come to the same point. This is a guy who's unfit for office. This is a guy who's a danger to this country, a clear and present danger. And our media culture, our media of clickbaiting and getting the story and all of that, not helping. And it's all in this both sidesism. You know, we got to, you know, if we find something crazy that, you know, that Donald Trump says, you know, we got to find something, you know, crazy that Kamala Harris says, because we don't want to look partisan. No, report what's going on. Report the crazy. It's the only way that this country will be saved is if we get actual, real news. The stuff that actually really happens. And stop with this holding stuff back. Oh, we can't handle that. We can't handle just how crazy this guy is? How incompetent he is? How dangerous he is? Yes, we can. And we should know that before November, because here's what I don't want. Here's what scares the you-know-what out of me. That on November 6th or 7th or whenever they decide this, the newspaper organizations, the news organizations say, well, we had all of this stuff, but we didn't want to look partisan, because you know somebody like Bob Woodward's going to write a book of all the treasure trove of crazy that's out there, and the American people don't get to see it, don't get to know it, don't get to debate over it, nothing. And why? Because they want this guy in. They want this guy in power. They want this guy in the Oval Office. The moneyed interests want this guy so bad. So bad that Elon Musk's going to spend $70 million of his own dollars. So bad that Elon Musk is going to go on stage and dance like a nerd like he is. And why? Pretty simple. They know what they want. They want more. They want more. It's that simple. They want more wealth. They want more power. They want more deregulation. They want to weaponize our government against working people. The fact that you've got Donald Trump and Elon Musk waxing poetic about firing striking workers, and that there's a union member out there somewhere who'd go, yeah, maybe Donald Trump's my guy, is just mind-blowing to me. Any person who's ever walked on a picket line, who's ever crossed that threshold, as I have done, knows that you might not come back. And if Donald Trump becomes president and Elon Musk is Secretary of Labor, let's just throw it out. You will cross that threshold and you will never come back. And that's how they want it. So this election is about a lot. It's about an awful lot. It's about the future of this country. It's about the now of this country. And if we choose poorly, and I use the collective we, not the individual we of you, oh, you're not talking to me, of we as a country, make the wrong choice. It's going to be a very long 4 years, 8 years. It's going to be a long period of time. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, Randy Weingarten from AFT is going to be here to share some thoughts from the road in the AFT bus. Back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I'm sure you've seen all the stories that the corporate media has been throwing out there pushing this frame that there's a division in the labor movement. You wouldn't know it by the fact that the four largest labor unions in the country, SEIU, NEA, AFSCME, and AFT, have all recently launched a joint volunteer canvassing effort to push towards Election Day. Because this is, I don't know if you've noticed, kind of a big election. And here to share some thoughts on this this launch, this unity, and the push to the big November 5th deadline. I've asked Randy Weingarten to come talk with us. Randy's the president of the American Federation of Teachers, AFT. Randy, thanks for taking time for us.
Of course, Rick. And, you know, I laughed and I giggled as you said that because, you know, the labor movement is not monolithic and there's not a whole lot of things that we all do in unison all the time. But frankly, I've never seen this kind of unison that virtually all of us did from the moment that first when Biden was running, but then from the moment that Kamala Harris got into the race, there was, you know, from the private sector to the public sector, people endorsed her, you know, for both in terms of what she would bring to the table, but also because of Donald Trump. And then what we've done, the four biggies, SEIU, NEA, AFSCME, and ourselves, we just said, let's do some joint canvassing together and let's do some joint appearances together. So all four unions, Michigan last weekend, Georgia this weekend, I'll be doing double duty in New Hampshire as well, and Pennsylvania next weekend. And a bunch of us are doing, as I am, you can see I'm on a bus. We've been on a bus from Labor Day to Election Day. We've done 99 stops in 15 states already. We'll probably be by 18 or 20 by the end. But, you know, we're all in and our membership is all in and they understand the stakes of the election. So, you know, I think what ends up happening with those who want to undermine common cause and unity and the sense that, you know, Americans are all in this together is to find an exception and exploit it as opposed to looking at what most of us are doing.
Yeah, how historic is it that all the four of you got together in this moment? Because look, you know, over the years there have been some fighting. As you said, it's not a monolith. There's been some back and forth. This, you know, kind of a common enemy, especially when you look at Project 2025 and what the conservative movement is trying to do.
Well, I think, look, the four of us, which are the four big public sector unions, I mean, we all have SEIU and us in particular have lots of private sector members as well. But the four of us really did a lot of work together during the disposition of the Janus case. And part of it was we were sending a message not only to our members, but to our communities, because we're in virtually every community in America, that the dignity and respect for the work that the workers we represent do is really important, but also the communities that we work in and represent are really important. And I think that a lot is being made of, you know, the issues right now about, you know, Trump. It's not just that he's a disruptor and it's not just that he's a liar and it's not just that he's not fit to be president, but we know from what's in Project 2025 that, and we know from what he did the last time he was president, that he talks a good game, but his actions are completely opposite what working people need. His actions are either for himself or for the rich. And that's part of the reason why you see the billionaire club is basically completely supporting him. You know, what does Elon Musk want? What does Uline want? What does DeVos want? What do all these billionaires that have been throwing money at him want?
More.
They want their tax cuts and they want no regulation. And when you have the deep fakes that you have, and when you have AI changing everything in America at breakneck speed, and when you have a labor movement that is now representing people who want just to be part of the middle class and just to deal with affordability and have decent pay, why is it that the billionaires and Trump are all on one side and most of us are on the other side? Because they want more. So what's happened is that by the four of us working together, and we represent lots of different folks, what we're saying and signaling to the country is that we together need to create power, just like Harris is doing, so that people have a fair shot, so they don't just get by, but they get ahead. And so that was the signal we were trying to create. And look at what else is happening. I was in Michigan last week. The Michigan Teamsters leader was with the rest of the labor movement fighting for all the things that we need and want, which is what, you know, Harris champions. So
yeah. No, we had Kevin Moore on the we had Kevin on the program last week talking about that.
Yeah, we know what they're gonna do because we know what Project 2025 is. We know that Vance wrote the foreword for Project 2025. They're going to get rid of the things that create broad-based opportunity. They're going to get rid of the things that create power for working folks. And they're going to tax people. I mean, the tariffs are crazy. So, you know, but getting through the lies means this is a, and you've heard me say this before, it's a trust election. It's not a truth election. If it was a truth election, Harris would be winning by 20 points right now. It's a and because people like our policies, but it's a trust election. And that's why we're on this bus. And that's why we're all doing this stuff together, because we're sending a message: who has your back and who is by your side and who's going to fight for you? And that's your union. And that's, you know, your educators. And that's the people who actually have your back every single day.
Yeah, now, as I started off this segment with, you know, the frame is that labor is so divided that, you know, that Trump's going to win the union vote. When you start telling people what the 4 years under Donald Trump looked like and what Project 2025 is, I even have my red hat friends going, well, that's not great. So as you're out there knocking on doors and you're talking to members and you're talking to people, is that resonating? The fact that Donald Trump was the guy who nominated Neil Gorsuch, who decided the Janus case? Is it resonating that his administration from top to bottom was corporate-based? Are you finding that to be the reality?
Yes. I mean, look, it is resonating. And it's, again, the union movement is not a monolith. And there are a whole bunch of dudes in particular who are really angry about their lives. And young people and young guys who are angry and feel disaffected. And so you're not going to get to every single one of these folks in one conversation or two conversations. But what happens is the labor movement, if you look at where normal voting patterns are right now, the labor movement bests them in a lot of different ways, because people who are involved in unions understand that, you know, the contrast, and they understand that, you know, Donald Trump ain't good for workers or working people, regardless of the rhetoric. But don't underestimate, you know, the sense of people feeling like the world has changed. The world is changing quickly, and they feel left behind.
Yeah.
And what Donald Trump is able to do is, even though he's lying and even though the facts are clear that what, you know, he's proposing ain't going to help, excuse my language, but there is, he's a great snake oil salesman. So, you know, you just have to talk to people. But I think that the race is close enough. Harris made up 8 to 10 points from where Joe Biden was when Harris came into the race. And, you know, this is really going to be a turnout election. And that's why that's why these billionaires hate us so much, because we talk to people and they want the power. And we want shared prosperity. Like, why is that so radical to want a working folk to have a decent wage, to be able to afford things, to be able to afford a home, to be able to have a vacation every once in a while, to have a decent pension, to have decent health care, and to be able to make sure their kids have a decent future? That's America. That's not radical. And they just don't want us to have it.
Yeah. Now, you know, as you were going through talking about, you know, mostly men, because it's true, you know, people of my generation were told, you know, you don't need those working class factory jobs. We're all going to have corner offices, wear shirts and ties. And that service sector kind of economy just didn't produce the kind of prosperity that a manufacturing economy did for my grandparents' generation. And now, look, they didn't agree on everything either, which is why I say the way we reunite this country is to reunionize this country. We got 35% union density. We got a whole different political outlook.
Totally.
So the question that I keep coming back to, and for me, that idea of, you know, how we get that idea of how we get to that next place where we want to be is, you know, which candidate stands with working people, and yet there isn't a Republican who signed on to the PRO Act.
Look, if you look at the facts, there is no question that on every measure, can you hear me or no?
Yeah. You're there.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Sorry. We're in a bus, so you know sometimes the Wi-Fi goes out.
You gotta love technology.
So, but if you look at facts, whether it's exactly whether it's public education, whether it's union rights, whether it's jobs, whether it's pensions, whether it's healthcare, if you look at every single issue, Harris is pro-worker, pro-labor, pro-public education, pro-opportunity. And Trump is pro-rich and pro-himself.
That's it.
And so, you know, and you heard it. Vance just said, oh, we don't believe in the PRO Act. So my kids, when I taught, my kids at Claire Barton High School used to say, you got to walk the walk. It's not just about talking. You got to walk the walk. And so their policies, I don't care what their rhetoric is, their policies are anti-power to the people. That's their policies. So it's a matter of, you know, there's another thing we learn when we teach, or when we teach, which is it's not what's said, it's what's heard. And you meet people where they are. So I don't, you know, I understand the anger with when the country changed and we saw deindustrialization in so many different places. You know, people feel like their dignity was stripped. And we have not been able, even though the U.S. is doing better than any other economy in the world, Biden was not able to move fast enough, even though we moved faster than any other time in history, to actually create and recreate dignity for people. So you got all these new manufacturing jobs, and you got all these new pathways. And in like, you know, 3 or 4 years, if Harris becomes president, you're going to see this tremendous renaissance in America in terms of reindustrialization and in terms of jobs and good union jobs. But, you know, that it takes a little while. It takes a minute for these things to happen. And, you know, we're seeing that in terms of the labor movement. We're seeing that in terms of people's care for public education. But we're at a moment of time of great anger. So the key is, who's going to help your family?
Yeah.
And I can say with conviction, that's why the four unions are doing this together. That's why the whole labor movement is doing this together. It's Kamala Harris and Tim Walz who care about us and have the best policies to make to create a prosperous United States of America.
Now, last question
I've
got
for
you.
A fair United States of America.
Amen. Right there with you. Last question I've got for you. Tim Walz, former teacher, thoughts?
You know, I mean, for those of us who have taught, when somebody says, if I can handle lunch duty, I can handle you guys. and everyone who's taught understands exactly what that means. You got to treat kids and you have to treat people with respect and dignity. But you also have to make sure that people actually are treating each other with respect and dignity. And I think that if you listen to Tim on the stump, he is as authentic as a summer day is long, and he's using his teacher voice and his empathy, but his realness every day of the every day is on the stump. He is a great guy. He has been a great governor. He's a great school teacher, and he's empathetic. He's smart, and he gets. Let me say it this way: he gets shit done.
I love me some Tim Walz. Randy, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff. Keep up the great work. Stay on the road. And I hope to talk to you again once this is over and victory is declared.
Thank you, Rick.
Thanks so much, our good friend Randy Weingarten. I want to hear your thoughts. Have you seen the AFT bus on the road? It's been all over the place. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, Roxanne Brown, Vice President of the United Steelworkers, going to be here to share some thoughts on what their union's doing. Back after this.
Packers, Badgers, Bucks, and Brewers. Find your favorite team over the air on Civic Media.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Civic Media is your spot for sports. From updates on your favorite teams, live broadcasts of the Packers, Badgers, Brewers, and Bucks, and local sports coverage in your community, we've got everything you need. Find a station near you at civicmedia.us or download the free app today. We'll have more news and talk coming up here on Civic Media's stream.
Matt Nair on air.
Vice President and Director of Marketing for Versity, Gretchen Jameson, is with us.
When you donate blood, there's a couple of different products, if you will, that your blood can produce. There's whole blood. You can do platelets every 2 weeks. You can be a double red, which is what you do.
Yes. For me personally, whatever I can do to maximize my gift, as you say, is worth it.
You can go to versity.org and take a look at all the different ways to donate and give.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we head into the second last weekend of the election year, the sprint to November 5th, there are people out doing all they can do, knocking on the doors, shaking hands, kissing babies, making the final arguments on why, well, the Orange Menace should not be back in the White House. And I got to tell you, it doesn't seem like that difficult of an ask, given the fact that this campaign has just been weird. But here to share some thoughts on how weird and the message in the final days to her members, I've asked Roxanne Brown to come talk with us. Roxanne's the vice president over at the United Steelworkers. Roxanne, thanks for taking time for us.
Always great to be with you, Rick. Thank you so much for having me.
So what are you guys doing from now until November 5th? What's the marching orders?
We're going ham for the next 13 days. We are going ham. We've had, honestly, since August, a little over 100 steelworker members deployed all across the country. We're obviously in all the battleground states here in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Michigan, Wisconsin, Georgia, North Carolina. We're all over the country right now, talking to voters and talking about the wins that we've had over the past 4 years and about your shirt says working class hero, about who the true working class heroes are, not just at the top of the ticket, but all the way down ballot in communities all across this country.
Yeah. No, and look, you know, there's this push, and I've been talking to labor leaders across the spectrum. There's this push in the mainstream media to kind of pitch this idea of division. Mm-hmm. And the more I talk to labor leaders like yourself, the more that the leadership isn't divided, but they keep hammering on this, the members are divided. So as you're out there talking to members, are they as divided as the corporate media is telling us? And are they receptive to the message that you're bringing?
Yeah, I think it's a far sexier story to say that the membership is divided from the international. I think a lot of people don't know about a lot of what's happened over the last 4 years to help workers. And so that's what we've been spending the last few months doing, is just having those conversations about the policies on infrastructure that is benefiting communities, the policies on retirement security that saved the pension of now over a million, you know, workers across this country, including 120,000 steel workers. You know, and once we have those conversations with people, they're getting it and they understand why it's so important for us to not stop where we are right now, but to keep the progress going forward. And I was just in Ohio on Monday, and I had some really good conversations with people who said, you know what, you don't even have to talk to me. I'm good. I know we got to keep going. I know we got to keep winning. I'm with the union. That's most doors that I'm on. So I think this other narrative, you know, it's a far more, like I said, sexy narrative. But we're out there, we're doing the work, we're having the conversations, we're doing what we need to do to make sure people vote in their best interest.
Because, you know, it's easy to forget how things were the 4 years under Donald Trump, especially for union people, because their unions do such a good job insulating them from the realities of a bad administration like Trump's administration was. But are you talking about this with folks, reminding them that, hey, things were bad during the Trump years for organized labor, for working people? These were folks who were not on our side.
Yeah, we've been talking about what happened during the Trump administration, but also being truth tellers about what he is saying right now that may not have populated up in the American populace. So we've been talking about how he made it a point to have a National Labor Relations Board that was against workers and whose sole purpose was to try to make sure workers lose and corporations win. We've been telling that story. We've been telling the story of, you know, the fact that he was not supportive of Butch Lewis, the policy that saved the pension and the retirement for so many workers across this country. And right now, we're telling the story of a guy who wants to fire striking workers, who thinks that striking workers are a pain in the butt and an inconvenience to big business, and says that proudly. Who's telling Americans that he's not a fan of overtime. I don't know about you, Rick, but my family, like a lot of families around this country, my mom relied on her overtime. I'm a product of a single parent household. My mom relied on her overtime to pay her mortgage, to pay her car note, and to put food on our tables every single day. But he's been saying now he doesn't like overtime. He'd get rid of it. That's not something that is a working class, benefit.
No, absolutely. But in this kind of con man used car salesman pitch, he's saying what you just said. He doesn't like overtime and has actually throughout his life violated overtime laws. He's also simultaneously saying he's not going to tax overtime, because I've heard that a lot. My friends have gone, well, they're not going to tax our overtime. And I'm like, I don't know how you're going to do that, but there's this.
Right. But he's also doing this, right? Speaking out of both sides of his mouth. So he's saying he's not going to tax overtime, but on this side of his mouth, he's saying, and I don't like overtime, we're going to get rid of it. So which is it?
No, he's not going to tax it. That's right. He's honest at that point. He's not going to tax it because you're not going to get it.
Because you're not going to have it. You know, and so we've just been telling our folks, you really have to pay close attention to what is being said. He's telling us right honestly and upfront who he is and whose side he truly is on. He is not on the side of the American worker. He is squarely on the side of corporations. Elon Musk is one of the most greedy corporate barons that exist in our society today. He despises workers. Workers get hurt at his facilities every single day, and he gives them ice cream to make up for it. This guy is Donald Trump's best friend and is out campaigning with him all around this country. That's who he is. Yeah. That's who he aligns himself with.
And, you know, as my grandfather always used to say, if a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better get two to get it, because they understand return on investment. So when Elon Musk spends $70 million on Donald Trump and is handing out million-dollar pledge prizes, understand he knows he's going to get that back and then some.
Absolutely, and then some. And it's all about expanding corporations' profits. Elon is only aligning himself with Donald Trump because he knows there's a payoff for himself on the other side of a Trump presidency.
Yeah, now there's a lot riding on this election, and some of my steelworker friends have asked me, you know, where my position is on the sale of U.S. Steel, and that's a big issue for you guys at the steelworkers. Where do the candidates stand on the iconic U.S. Corporation being bought out potentially by a Japanese firm?
You know, Vice President Kamala Harris was actually here in Pittsburgh about 3 weeks ago, and she met with a small group of our steelworkers from the Mon Valley to talk exactly about this, to talk about the potential sale of U.S. Steel to Nippon. And she was clear and explicit to them. And she said, I do not support the sale of U.S. Steel to Nippon. I want to keep U.S. Steel, U.S. owned. I want your jobs here in the Mon Valley to go well into the future. So it's not just your jobs, but it's your kids' jobs too, if they want to work at this facility in the Mon Valley. She's been very clear, very explicit about that, not just to our members' faces, to us, and consistently out on the campaign trail. Donald Trump, you know, has also said that, you know, he would not support the sale of U.S. Steel to Nippon if he were president. But he says a lot of things that he doesn't mean. I think he says things out of convenience. We believe Kamala Harris, that she would block the sale. We do not believe Donald Trump. He is not someone that's proven to be a truth teller. He is not someone that has proven to be someone that workers can rely on. But Kamala Harris has proven that, and so we trust her.
But, you know, also, you know, he's got a record siding with corporate interests and big money interests more than anything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think at the end of the day, the CEO of U.S. Steel will whisper in his ear and say, hey, do me a solid. And that's the direction he's going to go in.
It's amazing to me that we're in this position. But, you know, the guy who speaks the loudest about Made in America, the guy who speaks the loudest about reshoring manufacturing and all of that, did none of it during his term. And you can attest to the fact that we lost manufacturing jobs during his tenure. The guy who doesn't speak a lot, but does a lot, actually is bringing those jobs back and investing in our infrastructure. And the Made in America part of this, to me, is a big part of this. Can you talk a little bit about the difference between, because I've had, you know, some of your members and union members say, you know, that they're equal on the Made in America issue. And I fundamentally disagree, but I'm curious what your thoughts are.
It's a fundamental difference. One of the biggest things that the Biden-Harris administration did just shortly after taking office in 2020 was creating a Made in America office at the White House. That's never existed ever in our nation's history.
And they picked an amazing person to run that office. Our good friend Celeste Drake, I love her to no end. A perfect person to be doing that, by the way.
Same. And someone who came from the labor movement. She was one of our, and remains one of our most brilliant strategists and minds on trade and manufacturing policy. And so what did the administration do? They selected someone with the chops to head an office that is so critical to the economy and to jobs all across this country. And so they did that and then moved forward with the bipartisan infrastructure law and embedded within that bill, Stronger Buy America policies. The Inflation Reduction Act, Stronger Buy America policies. The CHIPS and Science Act, which quite literally is meant to reshore semiconductor manufacturing and the components in that industry into the United States. This morning, I just spoke at an event with Ed Gainey, the mayor here in Pittsburgh, about water infrastructure. There's a $50 billion investment in drinking water in the infrastructure bill, the largest investment in our nation's history. And embedded within that is a policy that says, you gotta buy that ductile iron pipe and those components right here in the United States. And that pipe's made by my members in Ohio and Texas. You can go policy after policy after policy, and the proof is in the pudding. I have seen no proof to date of any jobs created, any significant investments in manufacturing facilities under the Trump administration. But what I have seen is the creation of 16 million jobs under the Biden-Harris administration.
I got to tell you, it's night or day. And when I talk to union members who give me the Monty Python line of, you know, what has the Biden and Harris team done for us? You have all of this stuff, so much that you almost can't remember it all.
We have a facility in Illinois, again, because of the infrastructure bill, and they make some of the valves and the fittings for water infrastructure projects, but also some components for fire hydrants. Because of that $50 billion investment in water infrastructure, that company came to the union and said, hey guys, we have so many orders coming in. Can we do a wage reopener in our collective bargaining agreement to raise the wages in our CBA so that we can attract more people, because we got to hire more people to do the jobs because of all this money coming in because of the infrastructure bill. Again, very clear examples of the wins and the successes that we've had under the Biden-Harris administration. We can't point to those things under the Trump administration.
Yeah, no, look, this is the economy heading in the right direction. This is the right path. These are sound investments in our infrastructure and in our country, and smart policy to ensure the jobs that come out of the manufacturing of what we need are right here. The reverberation effect is what we've been looking for. And look, at the end of the day, the Biden-Harris administration did it, and I believe Kamala Harris will take that on forward. Last line of question I've got for you, as a woman of color in a high position, you're the vice president of the steelworkers, to see someone like Kamala as the vice president of the U.S. now, potentially, hopefully, you know, God willing, on that Tuesday in November, going to be president. What does that mean to you?
It tells me that anything is possible. Kamala Harris, like myself, has Jamaican roots. And as an immigrant, you know, to this country from Jamaica, we immigrants come here for the American dream. We come here not just to achieve the American dream for ourselves, but to help America be great. And to see someone who comes from the same roots that I come from achieve what she has been able to achieve just as vice president, right? And to be on her way to the presidency tells me that anything is possible. And it should be a reminder, not just to immigrants coming into this country, but to all Americans, that there is no ceiling. That if other people tell you who you are supposed to be or what you're supposed to be able to accomplish, it's BS, because anything is possible. And I have a 7-year-old daughter who doesn't only see me and mommy in her position, but she's watching Vice President Harris, and she's keyed in to the fact that she is running for president of the United States. So she knows for herself that that's something that she can do one day too. And I just think it's incredible.
Yeah, it is. And look, you know, the compassion that comes out of Kamala Harris, especially since you brought up the immigrant issue, the fact that one person is talking about how to do something humanely and the other person is, you know, nothing short of inhumane.
That's right. That's right. You said it best, Rick. That's the best way to say it. All humanity right. Versus the other.
Yeah, I mean, and this election to me, a no-brainer. Last 30 second, what's the pitch to get people out to vote on November 5th?
Vote like your lives depend on it, because they do.
There you go. Roxanne Brown, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Roxanne Brown, vice president there at the United Steelworkers. I want to hear your thoughts. It shouldn't be this difficult, but the records are clear. One guy did a lot of talking, a lot of jabbering, a lot of lips moving. The other guy did a lot of doing. I'll take the guy who's doing. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 2002. That was the day that working people of the United States lost one of their greatest champions in Washington. Two-term Minnesota Senator Paul Wellstone died tragically in a plane crash. The crash took place just 11 days before Election Day, while Stone was running for his third term in office. His wife, daughter, three aides, and two pilots also died in the crash. While Stone was known for fighting for those who didn't have a voice in the halls of power, the poor, the workers, the farmers, the seniors. He once famously said, "I'm here to represent the little fellers, not the Rockefellers." The most impactful legislation the senator passed was the Paul Wellstone Mental Health and Addiction Equality Act of 2007. It required insurance providers to treat mental health at the same level that they would provide for physical health care. When he died, the United Electrical, Radio, and Machine Workers of America remembered Wellstone as the strongest voice for America's working families in the United States Senate. AFSCME Local 34 wrote, "He was the best friend that AFSCME had in the U.S. Senate and supported us and the issues that affected working families." At a 10-year commemoration of his death, Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton called Wellstone the conscience of the Senate. In January, the AFL-CIO established the Wellstone Award. The award honors elected leaders who take a strong stand for workers' freedom to come together in unions and who fight for social and economic justice. Wellstone once said, "Politics is not about power. Politics is not about money. Politics is not about winning for the sake of winning. Politics is about the improvement of people's lives." We could sure use more senators like Paul Wellstone today. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, Roxanne brought up an interesting point that I want to go back over, because the honesty thing is kind of a big deal. The telling the truth thing, kind of a big deal. Believing what the used car salesman tells me, kind of a big deal. For instance, here's a guy who has talked about Made in the U.S. Here's a guy who said, "We're going to bring all those jobs back. You don't have to move. We're going to bring all those jobs back to Lordstown, Ohio." Didn't do it. And people believed him. And they stayed, and they lost their jobs, and they lost their livelihoods, and some lost their homes. That believability, that you know, being honest and following through, kind of a big deal. And I point to, as I did yesterday, you know, the idea that if you're really into the Made in the USA thing, if it really is country first, if we're really going to pursue this nationalistic, you know, this you know, country first positioning, of which I'm not entirely opposed to, unless it gets crazy. Why were his Bibles printed in China? And again, this is one of those places where you go, you know, fool me once. Where's George Bush when I need him? His ties, his shirts, his golf balls, his vodka, his, you know, go down the list of all of the things that he did not make here, yet talks the talk. And when it really matters of actually walking the walk and following through and doing something, it's not there. And that should be a huge red flag, because I've yet to meet someone who doesn't understand what Joe Biden did. They may not credit Joe Biden for it. They may not believe he's done it, but they agree with what he's actually done. And that is to spend our tax dollars in a very smart way to rebuild our infrastructure. Roxanne talked about the water supply. I live not far from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which for a while had been called the sinkhole capital of the world, because buses would drive down the street and all of a sudden the ground would open up and swallow up a good portion of the bus, or a garbage truck, or a backhoe, or you name it. There were tons of giant sinkholes. And why? Because the water infrastructure underneath the ground was so bad. 100 years old, 125 years old, had not been replaced in a century. And now you've got Joe Biden saying, we got to replace that. We've got to go into these older cities. We've got to upgrade our water infrastructure. We've got to upgrade our roads, our bridges, upgrade our infrastructure. Broadband access. We need to make sure that every kid has access to high-speed internet. And if we're going to do that, because I've yet to meet anyone who goes, no, that's a terrible idea. We shouldn't be investing in our infrastructure. Everyone, universally, red hat, blue hat, green hat, pink hat, doesn't matter. Everyone goes, yeah, I'd like better roads to drive on. Yeah, I'd like less congestion on the highway by having better roads and bridges. Yeah, I'd like better internet. I've yet to find anyone, no, no, give me that pothole-riddled highway with the crummy internet. Hasn't happened. And then to take that and go, we're gonna invest in this stuff, and we're not gonna do it the way we used to. The old Alan Shepard, thing. Lowest bid got the contract. Lord, don't let me screw this up. Lowest bid got the contract. No, the smartest bid gets the contract. The one that meets the requirements that we've put forth, and one of them being, you got to make that stuff here. So all the steel that goes into the pipes, all the concrete that goes into the roads, all the iron beams that go into the bridges, all of the things that we use in rebuilding our infrastructure have a reverberation effect to other industries, to other jobs, to better opportunities for working people across the board. No one I've met opposes that. No one. Even my most arch conservative right-wing crazy person doesn't think that that's a bad idea. Now, they may go, well, I don't want the government paying for it. I want it privatized and taxed and tolled and all that stuff. Maybe that, but nobody disagrees really with the fundamental idea that we take investments and we rebuild our infrastructure and we have a reverberation effect by encouraging industry all around to do better. It makes perfect sense when you stop and think about it. It's that kind of positive snowball effect. When you start rolling this down the road and you start saying, hey, we're going to make sure that we have a really strong Buy American provision so that everything that goes into this creates good jobs here and that communities can once again thrive because they're manufacturing things again. And oh, by the way, let those jobs be good union jobs that pay good wages, have good benefits, have good health and retirement security, have job security. And the job security of knowing that we're going to keep building stuff, that we're going to fix our infrastructure, that we're going to fix our country, we're going to make this a place that we want our children to inherit. The other part of that is, as I said, the union job part of it, the fact that, in Biden's infrastructure bill, prevailing wage is right there front and center. Now you got Donald Trump who, while he was building things, he was cheating contractors left and right. Accused multiple times of cheating on wages, on overtime. There is a difference. And it is stark. This idea that, oh, they're both the same and, well, it's not going to matter. It does matter. It matters who you put into these positions because along with them comes an ideology. And Donald Trump has been very clear. He's on the side of Elon Musk. He's been very clear. He's on the side of corporate America. He has been very clear in every step of the way that the wealthy and the connected are more important than you and me. And you need not look at anything more than his tax bill, which in 2025, a good portion of it will repeal. Will sunset. And they're saying, oh my gosh, it's going to be a huge, huge tax increase on the working people. Yeah, that was by design. That was a poison pill that they put into that 2017 bill, thinking that Trump was going to be president for two terms. And that all of the giveaways they were giving would be someone else's problem down the road. They did that on purpose. And this is where my mind goes. This is not a difficult moment to think about. We know more about Arnold Palmer's putter than we know about Donald Trump's healthcare plan. And that is a bad thing. So as we go into this weekend and we tick down the final days, if there are the elusive undecideds out there, it's not that difficult. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Did I miss something? I want to hear your thoughts. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast, freespeech.org for our video stuff. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com.
This is Civic Media, bringing you news, talk, and community-minded conversations all across Wisconsin. You can find us at civicmedia.us and download the app for free today.